Welcome to the Whiskey, Jazz, and Leadership Podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss a drop of straight talk you can't get anywhere else. We discuss the whiskeys to drink, music to listen to, and what it really takes to be an effective leader. I'm your host, Galen Bingham, the Leadership Strategist. Tonight's guest, author and workplace culture motivational speaker, Frank Kitchen. Hey, what you drinking? Wow, I love it. And you know, I can see a direct connection between the way you described that inspirational experience to the culture element that you talk with organizations about all over the world. And so we're going to circle back to that link to culture, because Drucker said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. Mm-hmm. I'm on record.
Love it.
I'm on record by saying that Drucker was wrong. Drucker was not, it was incorrect, because he said culture eats strategy for breakfast. I believe that a better articulation of that, Mr. Drucker, is culture eats strategy for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and midnight snack. Because without culture, it really doesn't matter what the price is on your thing. It really doesn't matter the advertising that's on your widget. Culture brings all of that to life, or it sends everything down the tube. So I think that he just did not go far enough. And then your other element, because you didn't stop with doing what you love and creating an inspirational experience. You said that leaders need to, and this is the leadership part, teach others how to do the same. You know, I had a conversation earlier, I think last season, where I talked to Hamza Khan, and he talked about how the era of the superstar leader is over, where I am the man at the top of the hill, or the woman at the top of the hill, be like me, follow me, I've got this. That's over, but it's being replaced by those people, those leaders, those men, those women who can teach other folks to step into their greatness.
Yeah.
And leverage that greatness to help the organization achieve something that they didn't anticipate was even possible. And so I heard that in what you said about leadership is teaching others to do the same. Tell me more about how does that fit into some of the conversations that you have with organizations, where you're not encouraging them to make duplicates and robots and people that look just like the folks at the top, but to step into their own greatness.
Yeah, so the best one I can share is, obviously my name is Kitchen, and I always will do kitchen analogies on stage. It's just too obvious. It's been 50 years worth of jokes, you know? So I'm like, okay, it's like I turned it into a business, you know, leadership philosophy. But one of my mentors at one point, he came out to us and he goes, hey, everybody, I want to be judged on the people I promote, not the sales that I make. And that just blew us away. And we're working retail, and way back in the days, this is KB Toys, the toy store in the mall. And we got a whole bunch of cashiers. And he goes, my goal is for every one of you to get your own store. We're like, what is he talking about? I'm here to ring cashier, maybe get a discount on the video game, and, you know, deuces, I'm out. And he goes, no, he's like, that's my goal. He's like, I will train you how to go do this. Well, the funny thing is, everybody in that meeting got their own store, except for one. And the one person who didn't get it, she got married and she made the choice. She wanted to be an active and involved mother in her children's lives. So that was the piece. So once Jim, his name's Jim Pullen, once he taught me this, I used this idea for everywhere I went in the future, as far as any type of leadership position or role was going. Okay, not to, like you said, let's go back to basketball. You can't be the superstar. Like when I used to coach basketball, we told the girls, one girl would come up, she's like, hey, Frank. Like, she's like, yeah. She's like, you know, Coach Frank is like, you know, I don't score enough. And like, I was like, we can make anybody a scorer here. I was like, I can just give you more shots. I was like, but we need somebody to rebound. We need somebody to play defense. We need a goon. It's like, goon? Like, yeah, just somebody to knock people over and scare them. She's like, I can do that. And that was the piece of when we say teach others how to do the same is, what's that love that you have? Everybody's got their own special piece. And when I go with the kitchen analogy, I'll share with everybody, if you and I were to go to culinary school together, you and I will be taught all the same culinary skills, how to use a knife, how to clean the area, how to boil, how to cook, how to fry. But then when we go to open our own restaurant, our love, our joy, our passion, our positive experience, you may open a bakery. You're going to use those skills a completely different way. I might open up, you know, a salad joint. Someone else is going to open up barbecue because we got St. Louis. What else can we, compliment with, whiskey? So we got to go, obviously, have a little sipping bar. But the case is, a lot of the skills that we got taught are going to be applied differently. But the ultimate piece was, hey, I'm going to teach you the skills. You discover what you love and apply those skills to make sure you can be the best at what you love. That's what leadership is about. As you said, we're not trying to make robots or go and do, but what's that thing that you've got joy in? What brings you joy? Okay, I can teach you how to find and discover the joy. It's the thing that keeps you up all night, the thing that you hunger for, the thing that you got to talk to everybody about. Okay, what's the positive experience that it brings? By doing this here, I get to, provide for my staff, or I get to take care of my kids, or I get to, get my name up on the billboard, or I get a big check. Okay, that's your inspiration. Cool. What are we going to do to make that happen? That's the leader comes in. The leader is the person to teach them how to prepare. I mean, like any great chef, anybody's ever been in a kitchen, they can't do all the work themselves. They have to teach all the people how to replicate their success for that recipe or that menu. I know I'm going, deep into this analogy with the cooking, but that's what it is. We all have something that we want to cook up, something that we hunger for. But no matter what we like, you've got 85 plus whiskeys in there. You may sample those to me. I might only like one or two, but you're going to teach me how to taste those, how to savor it, how to really understand it, how to breathe it, to find what I like. So now when we're sipping, we might be sipping two different whiskeys, but we're going to have the same look on our face. We're inspired. We want to go try it again. Like, when can we do this again? I want to go teach somebody else how to enjoy whiskey. And maybe it won't be whiskey. Like, I'm not a whiskey, I'm a wine person. Like, okay, well, it's almost the same steps where you have to find somebody who has an experience in it, has some knowledge until you how to drink it, smell it, where to go buy it, how to store it. It's the same deal. So that's my feeling about the leadership piece is, how are we giving back to others? We all have our dream, but what are we doing to use our dream to help others live theirs? And when people see you living your thing, then they're inspired to go out and do their thing too.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. So I've been talking about this other guy in a couple of workshops that I've done recently, and I'm sure you may be familiar with Marcus Buckingham. He's written 25,000 books and come out of the Gallup organization, really, really smart dude. And he's got this cool Australian accent, which makes him kind of cool to listen to. One of his books that I got about 15 years ago that has just really molded how I think about leadership is, he is credited for being one of the forefathers of the strengths revolution. Mm-hmm. And what he says is that strengths aren't just those things that you do well. It's those things that you do well and you can't wait to do it again because it strengthens you. You're stronger when you do it, and that's a strength. And weaknesses are those things that you may or may not do them very well. However, while you do them, it weakens you, and that's a weakness. Mm-hmm. And I tell this story about when I was in my corporate job, the senior leadership asked me to analyze 1,200 employee write-in comments and whittle them down into some actionable themes that they could do something with. And so I spent all week reading 1,200 write-in comments more than once. I finally built an Excel spreadsheet and pivot tables, and I came up with 8 themes that I thought these 1,200 comments fit in. And I gave recommendations as to how the organization could address those 8 themes and shared it with the senior leadership. And they were all saying, oh my God, this is amazing. This is fantastic. This is wonderful. We know exactly what to do. And the entire time they were lauding me, I was thinking, oh my God, I hope they never, ever ask me to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just sucked every ounce of gray matter through my ear. Was not a strength of mine. So I determined that a big part of leadership is much like what you were saying about identifying the strengths in others and showing them how to leverage that, yeah, or leveraging it in a unique way for the organization. What are your thoughts about Marcus Buckingham's work and this whole idea behind strengths and weaknesses and how that fits into what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of thoughts about that one. And the first one is, like, when we're talking about leaders, leaders tend to, lead a team. And my personal definition, I'll say it slow so people can, hear it or even write it down. And if you're ever on this podcast, everybody you hear a speaker, they say, write it down. That means it's important. I go, leadership is the ability to educate, energize, and empower an individual or a group to live a dream. So I'll say it again. Leadership is the ability to educate, energize, or empower an individual group to live a dream. So we're talking about it right now. We got to educate people. So how do we figure out what our strengths are? So we're educating there. Then you got to energize and say, okay, this is your strength. This is what you're so good at. Keep going for it. But then the empower piece is, now that you believe that you can do it, I've educated you how to implement it. Now you need to go and do it. I'm not doing the work. And that reminds me of, and it's funny because I took 3 years of culinary. So you can imagine when I walked into my cooking class and they go, my teacher, I remember she goes, what's your name? I was like, Frank Kitchen. She goes, boy, tell me your name. I'm like, Frank Kitchen. She goes, I'm telling you, she's like, you say that one more time, you are out of here. Because it was all the basketball players, all the athletes at the school. So, you know how athletes are. We know that, like, they're always just cracking jokes. So she went down the syllabus. She goes, okay, Mr. Kitchen, have a seat. But I'm in there for 3 years. And I told people I use that in my speeches now. But I go, if you go into a kitchen, I've been around some chefs in different groups. The kitchen, everybody there has a specialty. And a team is a group of specialists. And we try to focus too much on what these weaknesses are. And I tell people, it's like, weakness is just an opportunity. It's an opportunity to get better at something. But guess what? My opportunity to be a connoisseur of whiskey will never be as strong as yours. You can teach me how to get better. So yeah, I might get 5 or 10% better, but my 5 or 10% will still be nowhere near yours. I should be focusing on what I'm strong at to go and do. So if you go into a kitchen, guess what? Everybody's got a specialty and all those specialties are needed. So we got these specialists combining. So yeah, we got the chef, and the chef, you know, he puts the menus together, has the face of the piece. Okay, guess what? We need that to draw people in. Then we got the person who's working out the greeter at the front. We got to get people in there. You know, then you got the person, you got the dessert person. You got the person who cleans the dishes. You got the sous chef. You got all these people who specialize in a different area, and they come together to create a great result. So as a leader, we have to understand, we'll go, it's like, oh, well, you know, Galen, he's weak at that area. Why are we focusing so much on Galen's weakness? We'd be like, okay, what is Galen great at? Let's put him in that position, because we put him in that position, then guess what? He's going to be inspired. You know, he's going to be energized to go out and do it. He's going to be empowered. But as leaders, we try to keep putting people in places where they don't thrive. I really don't like these groups where we almost try to set up people for failure to say, well, that's a growing, you know, opportunity for them. I'm like, no, that's a quitting opportunity. I'm like, obviously, I'm not good at that. They can't understand I'm not good at that. I'm going to go leave and find somebody who understands what I'm great and what I, you know, good at. So you said when the Gallup poll goes, it shows you part of what's going on. We got leadership. We got strengths and weaknesses. But are we going deeper saying, hey, are we teaching people how to apply those strengths? Are we educating them in that way? Because once again, we educate someone that they're strong in something. Then we energize them and we empower them to go out and keep doing great things and making a positive impact. So I had a gentleman. When I first started speaking, he goes, Frank, I'm like, yeah, this is how he educated me, Toastmasters group. And, you know, he's a lawyer, got the big, deep, very, you know, white voice. He comes up to me and he's just like, Frank, I never want to see you behind a lectern again. He goes, that is not your area of strength. He goes, you're good about moving around the room, making contact, engaging with people. I want to see you there. The moment he said that, my mindset changed, because people could see in my body language, that's just not me. I'm not scripted. Those are not my strengths. Why should I try to strengthen those areas? So he goes, here's what I want to see you go and do. So he educates, like, this is what you go do. You should always, he's like, don't worry about the other people. That's your strong point. That energized me. But then he said, you got to go out and do it and practice it. That's leadership right there. Educate that person, energize that person, and empower them to go out and do it.
That's a leader. That is a leader. I'm curious, because there's a magic moment that people often talk about, where you can tell that someone has found their space, they found their thing, they know exactly how to turn the dials, they know exactly that they are where they need to be. And for me, it occurs when I am talking to a group of people and I look into the audience, and it usually happens like this. Someone in the audience will look at me, then they'll look to the left, and then they'll look right back at me. And that's the magic moment for me, where I know, nailed it, right? That one person got the point that I was trying to make. And for me, it usually translates to reassurance that I'm in the right space at the right time with the right message. Describe, what is that magic moment for you?
But think about our world. We spend so much time telling people what they can't do and what they're not good at, and less time telling them what they are good at. So we demotivate people by doing like, well, you're not good at X, Y, and Z. Like, you know, on stage, people will laugh. I'm going, no one ever walks in and says, you know what, Galen, you own a steak restaurant, but you don't make breakfast. We don't go there to get breakfast from you. You make steak. Hey, Frank, you want a seafood restaurant. How come you don't make pancakes? That's not what I'm about. Hey, you know, my wife, Kelly, it's like, why do you have a bakery? Why don't you like, you know, why aren't you making like, you know, vegan and plant-based? That's not her specialty. So we don't criticize those people. Like I even joke with people like superheroes. We never get on superheroes about what they can't do. Superman. Okay. How can we never see you, you know, in a car? Dude flies everywhere. Spider-Man. I never see you in an elevator. Climbs up the building. Man, Wonder Woman. Everybody's so honest with you. Pfft, lasso of truth. We don't criticize those groups, but it's funny how our world works, even especially when it comes to leadership. Bring people into the office, pull out the piece of paper. Well, here's where you're weak at. Here's what's not working for you. Here's what's not good. Why would it want to be led by you? Versus if you come in, hey, Frank, here's what you're good at. Let's go to the basketball analogy. We're talking about basketball. Coach came up to me. One coach tells me, you're not good at all this. Didn't perform good. Another coach realized, like, oh, Frank, you're really good at the top of the key and in the corner. Let's find some plays to get you into those spots. That's a leader.
Man, I tell you, I love also you're reinforcing a conversation that I had with Mr. Keith Pegues. So go back to the beginning of last season. And he talks about this whole idea of the great resignation and the great renegotiation, which is the way that he terms it. But the things that you're talking about now seem to really cut at the core of what would make someone want to stay, right? What would make someone want to stay? And conversely, what would make someone want to leave for another $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year? And it's that personal connection with the leader. It's not that sage on the stage, yeah, that person that guides thousands of people. It's that one-on-one connection. Talk to me a little bit about how that message is received by some of your clients that you work with.
So the magic moment for me, I mean, especially when I'm on stage and I tell people, I always try to make, quote, mini relationships, which means I try to look at least every audience member in the eye at least once. And people are surprised when I get off stage and I'm like, yeah, it looks like you got about 650 people out there. Like, yeah, we got like, you know, 630, you know, 32, 655. How did you know that? Like, I was like, I looked at everybody. I'm like, what? It's like, you tracked all that while you're speaking. I'm like, most of us got ADD. It's like, I'm checking everything out. But when I look into the audience and there's that point where they actually lock eyes with you, because most people, you know, will tend to like look away or something. But like when you look around and they lock eyes with you and they almost give either that head nod or that aha. And it's almost like that energy back from them to you is like, hey, you know what? You've connected with me. I get what you're saying. And then if they can take it from that point of they go from eye contact and then they go down and they actually write the note. That's my magic moment of, okay, I got the eyes, I got the aha, and then they went ahead and wrote it down. And I put that in my Rolodex of just going, and for people don't know what a Rolodex is, go Google it. But that goes in my Rolodex of for the next speech is, let me make sure I hit that point again, because that got several people to lock eyes with me and go down and start to write it and get that aha moment. So it might be a quote that I share, a picture I put on the screen. I mean, like even you and I right now, as we're talking, and when you said, hey, you'll either say, hey, Frank, let's go again, or you got the smile right now. You just locked eyes with me. I was like, okay, that's the piece that my audience goes, and we have to be in tune and listen to it. Just like leaders, many times we have to be in tune and be willing to listen to our teams and our staffs to find out, you know what? I like when you did that. I enjoyed that piece, or they're more receptive or engaged. Then guess what? You should do that over and over again. It's not trying to be a people pleaser or anything, but as a leader, it's our point to find that moment of engagement, because once people are more engaged, then they say the retention of that information or the retention and application of information goes up, I think, to like 93%. The more engaging you make it, 93 to 97% opportunity to apply that and replicate what you're doing. So that's that aha moment for me.
Wow, guys, this is what you get. This is what you get when you hang out with brilliant folks. And I actually kind of feel bad because I didn't warn you at the beginning that you're going to need a brand new pad for notes. And so this one's on me. All I can suggest is that you need to listen to this again.
Come back.
And we haven't even gotten into conversations around your crew, you know, who are the people that you lean on to get better and better and better at what you do? I happen to know a few people that that you run in circles with, but I the adage that you look at someone's friends and you can tell their success absolutely rings true with you. So I would love to get into that. We only talked a little bit about family in my business. I say that I help executives make permanent success in their work and life. And the reason I say work and life is because I don't care how successful you believe you are at work. If your life, your home life is messed up, try being successful at work. And if things aren't going well at work, it's going to have an impact on your home life. So we got to handle both of those.
Okay.
And we didn't talk about that. But man, I'll tell you, I am feeling really nervous as a business person about giving more for free. So we're going to have to bring you into the VIP room, man. So if you're listening to this and you're not a VIP member, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what to tell you. It's only a couple bucks a month, and you get to hear more of folks like Frank Kitchen. And I want to understand what that CSP is about. We make a big deal about that, but the most folks don't know that that's a designation that just basically stamps and says, go ahead, let's talk about that.
Before we go behind the velvet ropes there. So, so when I got into the speaking piece, I had a couple friends who were part of the National Speakers Association. And, you know, anytime you get a part of a group of organization, you want to know who's the best of the best. Where do the best hang out? And I started to understand the best speakers, they got Hall of Fame speakers, but Hall of Fame speakers, that's subjective. People start saying, okay, I think you're part of the Hall of Fame. That's kind of judgmental, but they had this thing called CSP. And CSP means Certified Speaking Professional. And as of today, there's less than 1,000 people around the world who've ever earned it since it was created in 1980. So 8 billion people on the planet, only 1,000 people have earned it. And ultimately, what you have to do as a speaker is not just about being a good speaker on stage. It's about how much income have you earned? Are you working ethically? What do your clients think about the feedback that you're doing? Like, are they giving feedback? What do your peers think about you? So it's this whole process. And it's not even a case where you can just do it and be there. It takes 5 years minimum to earn it. So when I set out after getting fired, about a year later, I went to my first NSA meeting. I'm like, oh, I got to join NSA to go and do. And I want to go for this process. It takes 5 years to do it. I did it in 5.5. I mean, so that was a piece I was highly motivated to go and do because I had several friends who had, and they go, hey, this allows you to prove to your clients that you are one of the best of the best. I mean, essentially, it's like putting doctor onto your name. I've got a quote doctor of professional speaking. But even once you earn it, you have to give back to the industry. So whether it means I show up to professional development events, I volunteer to teach other speakers, back to that whole leading piece with the whiskey, jazz, and leadership, I have to give back to the industry to make sure other people become better at this speaking game. So it's an assurance to clients that they're working with a true professional, not just somebody walking in off the street. And then, like I said, I don't get to keep it unless I keep the process going. So every 5 years, I come back under a review to make sure I can get it. So Frank Kitchen, CSP, Certified Speaking Professional.
That's a really big deal. And that's why, you know, any of us who are in the speaking industry, we want to acknowledge the folks that have cleared those hurdles and that have done the work and that have the business to earn that CSP. That's a really, really big deal. Mark Pittman, I think you guys heard from last season. Again, these are folks that do this stuff for real. I think that is a lesson to what it takes to be successful in any field. You've got to decide that being average is not enough. Being good enough is not good enough. You've got to be willing to put in the work, honest work, like we started this conversation with. Not the kind of work that, you know, we can all fake like we're working hard. You know, you had a manager used to say, let's not confuse activity for productivity, right? Yeah. So Frank, I just want to thank you so much for what you do, but more important, how you do it. Because there are thousands of people who do what you do, but there's only one person on the planet that I've ever come across that does it like you do it. And that's what we need. We need to have more people living in their space of genius, not afraid to put their own stamp on this thing. I think it was Booker T. Washington who said, greatness is to do a common thing in an uncommon way. And that's what we're talking about here.
That is what we're talking about. I mean, as people who are leaders here, and we'll leave them before we go to the VIP, is I told people, as a leader, as a business owner, as a speaker, entrepreneur, our job isn't to blend in, it's to stand out. And it's standing out with the work and the results that we produce. I'm not saying you got to be flashy and shiny, but stand out. Don't try to be like everybody else. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's like, are you trying to just be like all the other leaders, or are you trying to stand out? And the other part is, when you stand out, guess what? People aren't going to like you, but leadership isn't about people liking you. Mm. It's about people respecting you. And I've had a lot of leaders where I like them, but we walked all over them. And I have a lot of leaders that we didn't like, and we walked all over them. But I've had a lot of leaders where I didn't like them personally, but I respected the results that they produced and how they did it and how they respected me. I had no problem following them. So when it comes to leadership, stand out, earn people's respect. Don't try to just get them to like you, because that's not what leadership is about.
Well, that's where we're going to have to end this part of the conversation, man. I can't wait to get you in front of my VIPs. On this side of the rope, man, raise your water. We're going to cheers out. And as I said before, man, thank you so much for embodying the words of Miles Davis, who is my all-time favorite jazz musician. And he said that sometimes it takes a long time to learn how to play like yourself. Dude, I'm just so glad that you put in the work and that you're now playing like Frank Kitchen, CSP.
And see, I don't know if you're going to have music going out, but now you got some kind of blue in my head. As soon as you said Miles Davis, like that, just like when I'm hearing the horn right now. So yeah, this is great. Thank you so much, Galen.
All right, man. Cheers.
Okay, cheers.
Hey, it's not too late. Hit that subscribe button so you're sure to catch the next episode. If you're really enjoying the vibe, leave us a review or become a VIP for guests and show exclusives. Cheers.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.